What's up, everybody? We're sitting here at Pearl Pine Brewery. My name is Robert, and I'm sitting here with
Kyle, as usual. How are you guys?
And we got a couple guys that we're going to end up talking to for competing for the Best Ranger competition. So maybe I'll let you guys kind of introduce yourselves, and then we'll go into a little bit of the backstory.
Yeah. I'm Garrett Streaks. Yeah.
Mike Faltus.
All right, Mike. You got it down now. All right. So, Garrett, you're one of the individuals that, let's start at the very beginning. Where are you from and the backstory and stuff and what led to this point?
Yeah. So, I'm from originally Omaha, Nebraska. Grew up around there and, you know, was probably kind of looking at getting in the military after high school, but ended up choosing to play college football instead. My freshman year of college, I had a freak injury, bent over in a walkthrough practice. My whole left leg just fell apart.
Eight places.
Yeah, my leg and ankle. It's not documented on my military service record, so hopefully I get that on the back end. But yeah, I got in before the whole Genesis thing, so we could lie about everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah. My recruiter was like, do you have any scars or hospitalizations? And I was like, no. Yeah. Let's make this easy. I went and played football and then didn't work out and transferred to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Was doing college the right way, drinking a lot of beer and not going to class. So it was just a different lifestyle, not one that I was real happy with.
Not different for college students.
Yeah, it wasn't, but I was always, I was always like wanting to be a competitor. And through high school sports, where I kind of found my groove in life and I see it myself all the time still is like I've never been able to pick something up and be the best at it. This is a good story actually. High school basketball, my junior year, we had come off a pretty good year in football and I had gotten to play quite a bit. And everyone, like my sophomore year of high school basketball, like I didn't play a minute. I was terrible and I didn't put much effort into it, to be honest with you. But we had a kid on our varsity basketball team who was already going to go play at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, D1, top guy in the state, all-state player. I had decided, everyone thinks I'm going to get cut from the team initially, but I figured, nobody's going to expect me to stop him, but if I do, maybe they'll notice. So it was actually up until the night before the first game, and I hadn't practiced with the JV team much. So I went up to our head varsity coach and the assistant who coached JV, and I was like, hey, I haven't gotten many reps with the JV team. Like, what am I going to be, the point guard or the shooting guard? Like, I don't really, I haven't been practicing a ton with them. And they just looked at me, and I was like, what? And they're like, you're going to start in the varsity game tomorrow. And I was like, I went home and told my parents that, and they didn't believe me. Like, I was I kid you not, everyone had money on me to get cut from the team. But, so I kind of like that. I've ever since then just learned, I'm never going to be the guy who can pick it up. But I'll always put in more time than the guy next to me. I went into college and
what'd you end up majoring in?
So I did end up dropping out, but it would have been political science.
Why'd you choose that?
Here's another side story. When I transferred, I got an internship at a congressional office with a member of Congress kind of took that same mentality, but there was a lot of drinking involved and
at Congress?
Hold it. Was it a summer internship?
Yeah. It wasn't on the Hill. It wasn't on the Hill. I did go to the Hill though for a little bit, but
I'll bunker in.
I worked really hard at that. It wasn't satisfying to me, but I was kind of applying the same mentality to it. I was working really hard at it. I was seeing some of that pay off. I think my last position, I ended up, I was running a federal campaign for a member of Congress at like 20, really? 21 years old. Yeah.
Running it.
Yeah. I was the campaign manager. Yeah. And, which is crazy to look back on. Like, it's wild to me. I mean, I got to like meet the president and stuff like that once. I was like, it was just weird, but, I was just, you know, physically not real satisfied with myself and just wasn't finding passion in it. And I had always, you know, had this itch about the military for a while. So I, you know, I got in really good shape. I was telling you, I had a buddy of mine who told me to read that David Goggins book, and I couldn't put it down, which, you know, some people find that cringy, but, you know, it got me motivated. So, yeah, I got really big into, you know, working out. I lived at the gym and then was going to sign an 18 x-ray contract and had a close family friend who retired, a two-star general in the Guard, and had me sit down with some National Guard recruiters, and then I ended up enlisting in the Nebraska National Guard. So I dropped out of school. My parents were not happy about that, but dropped out of school, went to basic training, went to airborne school, and then got to my unit. And, you know, I was kind of trying to decide if I made the right decision. Got there, became the radio telephone operator, different tempo for a guy who was looking to be an infantryman and, you know, kick down doors and win wars. So it was a low
sitting
moment.
Sitting in a talk with a bunch of officers.
Yeah. It was a low moment, for sure. But I we had a PT test right away, and I, kind of knocked that out of the park, and, had, you know, some of the guys in the sniper section, pulled me over and, asked me if I wanted to, you know, go through their indoctrination program. And, it was the best group of guys I could ever found myself in, at a, you know, a very pivotal point in my life. And I just made it clear, like, hey, I want to go get, you know, I'll not work a civilian job and just go work, you know, go to all these military schools. So I got an opportunity to go to Ranger school, and then I think I was home for 2 weeks and went to mountain warfare, and then went to sniper school, and then we got to go to the mountain rifleman's course, which is like the mountain sniper course up in Vermont.
But, and you did this right after Ranger school.
Yeah. I was weird. It was funny. I actually got a call when I got my phone back after Ranger school, right before we graduated. And they're like, hey, we have a rucking competition in like 3 weeks for the state. Do you want to compete in it? And I was like, you know what? Sure. Yeah. So I tell you what, it's funny too. They told me, like I got back and I met with my battalion command sergeant major, and he congratulated me on everything, and he was like, hey, you know, like, take some time, like, get your body right again. And I think I left his office and went straight to the gym, and like was already trying to figure out how to, you know, get some strength back, and was just right back to it. And that's just my personality. You know, I'm always gonna kind of go against the grain and try and figure out, you know, how to do things better, and how to be a better soldier, and give myself more opportunities to learn. I mean, it also, you know, I knew they were going to keep giving me opportunities, and, you know, I needed to prepare myself to be able to, you know, do well and accomplish these things. And it was really exciting for me too, because it was like the first time I'm like, I'm extremely passionate about these things, and, you know, I'm getting to do them at a high pace, you know, very early on in my career. So
high speed unit too, right? You were in a LRS unit.
Yeah. So they were a
long range reconnaissance surveillance. So,
yep. Yeah. So, and then when they disbanded that, they were just an airborne unit, but one of very few in the country. And that's a very unique opportunity that I didn't appreciate at the time. But, you know, even like, you know, I work at the Warrior Training Center now down here at Fort Moore, but, you know, it was like I came in and they're like, oh, you're airborne qualified, or are you five jump chump? And I'm like, no, I'm able to go to jump master. Like I've got a lot of jumping experience. So it's like things like that, like you just don't see in the National Guard. So very, very fortunate to have landed where I did. And I was surrounded by great leadership from the get-go, who kind of, you know, saw some potential in me and just kept giving me opportunities. So I'm just beyond blessed. That was a good opportunity for me too, to get away. And like I was telling you, I moved to Colorado, right after I graduated Ranger school. And, I was actually trying to go, with 519 out there and go to selection. Didn't end up working out that way. And it was a big, you know, kind of down point for me for a while, but, you know, everything's worked out how it's supposed to. And, I'm kind of good at, like, you know, at least now I've honed in on, you know, something I think isn't going my way. Just, you know, keep going and keep faith, and the right things are always working out. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Mike, Rhode Island. Let's talk about it.
Great beaches, I guess. Good Italian
cold water, food. Though, right? Atlantic, a little bit different.
Yeah, it's cold. It's cold. Good Italian culture. Yeah. Good, a lot of robust culture, you know.
So. End up going to Providence as far as the university, then.
Yeah, correct. Kind of bounced around colleges a little bit.
What was the other schools in?
Iona, Holy Cross, Providence, played football as well.
Okay. What position were you?
Receiver.
Okay.
This was before.
I see you more like linebacker than I do receiver.
Yeah, I mean,
this guy would have been covering you.
Both of them nailed as slot receivers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, this was before the passing game became more prevalent.
Yeah, so. 1952.
Yeah, that's it. Run, dive left, dive right. You know,
3 yards in the cloud of dust. You know, yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. So you end up playing football and everything, and you got your degree in finance.
Yeah. So worked in finance out of college, and you know, the economy crashed. Bounced around a little bit.
Unfortunately, we all remember that.
Yeah.
Or at least some of us.
Yeah, you're too young. And joined the military. I was a little undisciplined, a little immature, and you know.
Prior to that, though, you were. Let's back up just a second. You were working on Wall Street.
Correct.
And you don't have to name the name of the company, but what's more important is what role you played there and what you were doing at that time frame.
I was a junior analyst, so everyone comes in kind of as an analyst, and you're working probably 90 to 100 hour weeks as an analyst, sleeping in the office, things like that.
I don't think people really have a true appreciation for what you just said. They see these, you know, tremendous opportunities. They look at the cash side of this or the money side of this, and they go, oh, my God, tremendous. But then that is not what they see.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a culture on Wall Street that's still pervasive today. You're a junior analyst. Everything's about time is money. So most of the Fortune or the Big Five investment banks, you're working, like I said, about 100 hours a week. But you get paid on your bonus. I mean, you get come January, you're feeling nice for about 2 weeks. And that's kind of the culture of Wall Street.
So to paint that picture for those individuals that are actually trying to do the math of what 100 hours a week might be.
18 hours a day for a 5-day work week would be 90 hours.
Correct. It's cyclical like everything else. On a heavy week, you're probably hitting the office at 5 a.m. and you're working till, depending on what the deal structure is, you're waiting for corporate lawyers. You're going to bed at like 3-4 a.m.
Yeah.
And then get up 3 hours later to just rinse and repeat.
I mean, so, you might as well go ahead and have a cot there.
Oh, you do. You sleep in the office. You sleep under your desk. I mean, they have.
Under your desk. I love it.
They do have shuttle services that'll take you anytime after midnight. They provide free transportation back.
Oh, how nice of them.
Yeah. but that's as a junior person in the corporate world on the highest level, that's kind of what you can expect.
Oh, most definitely. I've been there, and yeah. It's not as glamorous as most people think that it is.
Mean there's no like work-life balance with 100 hours billed?
But no. I will say the January parties, when you get the bonus payouts, it's like a month straight of like VIP club service.
And so, then the dopamine wears off and the cortisol takes over.
And then reality hits and 5 a.m. There you go. And it all starts up. It's Groundhog Day over again. Yeah. So you end up doing that for a period of time, and you're like, okay, I'm like done with this. And so what made you decide to come into the military?
You had
a relative that served, right?
I do. Well, to tap on the congressional story.
Yes, let's talk about that.
I was actually a U.S. Senate intern over the summer.
Through college then.
Yeah. I hold the worst title of like U.S. Senate intern ever. Your job as a U.S. Senate intern is to either write to a correspondence or like I crushed the doors, obviously. But like writing the letters, I never did. So what I did was the one thing I knew I could do, which was me and my buddy Owen, we held down the softball fields. So in D.C. over the summer, there's these congressional softball tournaments that are like huge. And so me and Owen would every Thursday and Friday go out there, just get plastered and hold down the field. We wouldn't even play. We would just hold the field because you're reserving your spot for your team. And that's kind of, that was my U.S. Senate internship. Terrible, but I still get the same form letter they send out to everyone, which is like, oh, they're so competent and all this. So it helped out. But cool experience. I was there for Chief Justice Roberts' hearings to get confirmed as the mm-hmm. Chief Supreme Court Justice. I met yeah. him. I shook his hand. And I would say that's a highlight. I met McCain. I met...
But not the softball. The softball was...
Softball, we were terrible as an yeah, office. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was Texas took the heat. Good. But so it was great. Great opportunity. Met Reverend Al Sharpton. There's so many people you meet in D.C. that you take for granted. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, there's a subsection of violence in this culture that I think is, you know, highlighted more than... Most Americans, I think, are law-abiding citizens, and unfortunately you have irregular citizens, whatever reason or rhyme or reason, that kind of take over the main news of the media. D.C. is no different. My time in D.C. was great. There's no violence, anything like that. So, yeah. In fact, I would say... You know, regardless of political persuasion, I'd say at the time, Senator Obama was the Illinois senator, and he used to have a weekly coffee with him, which I went to.
Is that right?
Yeah. Although I don't necessarily persuade that way, I thought it was cool just to hear different opinions and his policies on certain things. And this was... literally the year before he ran for president. So
yeah,
it was a D.C. It holds a wide variety of opportunity for you know, a number of thinking.
Little did you know at that time frame.
Oh, we knew. I mean, they had a stage photo. We all knew he was running for president. We didn't know he'd necessarily win. He was running against McCain at the time.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
And I actually met Senator McCain.
Vietnam veteran,
yeah,
right?
Vietnam pilot.
Vietnam veteran and who was shot down POW. Yeah.
Correct. And refused to return home. Great guy. I mean, just a real bastion of old school type, you know, traditional values. I had the opportunity to meet him and shake his hand, and that was probably the highlight of my experience in D.C., besides the softball.
Well, that's some like serious name dropping. I'm just saying, you know, as you're going.
Well, he brought it up. I mean, so there you go.
So after you spent some time out there, you decided, all right, I'm going to go on active duty. So at this point, what made you decide to go on active duty? You'd done a little bit too much partying, been working some hard hours, and you're like, okay, I need to do something easier.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that.
I need to go to the Army where I'm going to continue drinking and working long hours. Yeah.
But maybe a little more focused, I guess. For me, it was just I needed the structure and discipline to kind of be a little more focused and disciplined. So.
Yeah. And so you ended up going the 18 X-ray route.
Oh, yeah.
Very correct. Similar, like, backstories in that
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is.
We do. Unlike him, though, so I passed selection, went through most of the Q course. I got booted out of the MOS phase.
You passed pre-selection, then selection.
The 18 X-ray program has, like, a cheat code. It's like if you're playing a video game and you have, like, the cheat codes. If you're an 18 X-ray, you basically train up at Camp McCall, which is where selection is.
And so, where it ends.
Yeah, exactly. Ironically, you're right. And so you are not only training to a standard, you're also watching the standard as it happens, kind of.
Yeah.
And so it's a huge cheat. So by the time you go into selection, you kind of know what's going on. Great program. Went through selection, got through the Q course, great experience. And then MOS, I get dropped.
Yeah. So in the MOS phase now, so if you follow the 18 X-ray program or even the selection program and then, of course, Q course program, it's changed over the years, you know, from post-Vietnam to today. It's multiple times. They switch the periods of which classes happen or things happen. In your case, MOS is probably closer to the end. And after that, I think it's just... oh my God! What's after that?
Robin Sage.
Yeah. And I was going to say, which Robin Sage or a bunch of local guys who most of them are former veterans or even community members who this is like a big thing to come out there and participate in that event. So you made it right to that point.
Correct.
And then I'm not like trying to rub it in it or anything. Mike,
just
but,
salt in the wound.
Yeah. I mean, but you were like really close. And at that point, I think you shared with us that you were on the range and. There was an incident that happened and you made the wrong decision, at least in their eyes. You thought you made the right decision. So then it led you to reclass. And at this point, you could have been reclassed anywhere in the needs of the Army, but you ended up getting reclassed 11 Bravo, right?
So I don't think the MOS factor plays. It's kind of like Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
They show you all the glory, but then they don't show you, hey, if you don't make it, where are you going to go? In the Army, you're still in a level 11 Bravo, but I had people that failed out of that course that went to like Louisiana and nothing wrong with that.
Fort Polk. Yeah, I was there at one point.
So
there is something wrong with that. I'm sorry, but
have you ever been to Fort Polk?
I have. Yeah. I've been to Louisiana though.
Maybe
no. There's not the same place.
Yeah, no.
So for me, I just got fortunate. We did a PT test. All the people that get dropped, you sit in this bay where everyone's just sulking. And there was a Ranger Regiment recruiter there, and he held a PT test. And, you know, I did well. So me and four other buddies were selected to kind of, hey, we're going to bring you over to RASP, RIP, whatever
it was. Yeah, I'm not sure that we were talking about that offline. I'm not sure if that time frame, I think it was just like 2010. So
yeah, correct.
I don't remember the timeline, and I don't have Google actually ready to figure out whether that was RIP at that time frame or RASP, but I can say that RIP was a little bit different structure than RASP, and we had the Regimental Sergeant Major Brett Johnson on not that long ago, and we were talking about this, where RIP was a lot more physical-based, whereas RASP all of a sudden started getting past the physical state and started getting more into preparing individuals because more than likely they were going to end up at their unit and then have to deploy quickly. So you probably were guessing in that RIP time frame because it was based on more about the physical standards and whether you were a physical specimen or not.
Yeah.
And you end up going through RIP and you end up volunteering for second and getting it. And it's probably because we were talking about that most people want to go away from third bat because it's too close to the flagpole, and they want to go to first because it's a great, you know,
it's
cool.
Great.
Yeah. Great. Right? So you end up wanting to go to second, though. So how was that?
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. It's away from the flagpole. Great leadership.
Washington, the first time out that way. I mean, you went total West Coast.
Yeah. It's a different lifestyle. You know, there's not as much culture as there is on the East Coast, obviously. But, yeah, it's good.
So when you were there, you ended up deploying. We were talking about a similar time frame that you got.
Yeah, he said he was – you said Hellman, right? So that was actually out west, I believe.
Yeah.
You were on the opposite side.
I was on the opposite side.
Okay, gotcha.
Pakistan side.
That was the first – well, Hellman, what is that, southeast? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you're asking me for a mount. I mean, it was Camp Leatherneck. That's all I know. I mean, a bunch of Marines getting haircuts once a week. You know, you're just like, what are you cutting at this point? But, you know.
Did you end up growing the beard?
I did not grow the beard.
Really?
I got offered a deployment to grow one, and it just wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
So. What are you...
It's I'm a Ranger. You know, I'm not trying to be a specialist.
When he came down here, he got the old school Ranger haircut.
Oh, yeah, for shit. I got to send you guys back. Yeah. So, well, now that you're bringing it out.
Don's over here talking about the hair.
So you got the 96 on time.
So we have this coach, Matt Sarrant, great guy. He's kind of old school, no smiles, just
old school yeah, Ranger kind of.
Yeah.
Okay, so hey, well, the black boots. The,
no, starch. Not that.
Oh, okay, high and tight. No.
No, right, but no. Just like, hey, what you see was what you see is what you get. I'm gonna evaluate you on your performance. So I go second weekend. I talk to the. The guys that are probably the better team than us, barely, by the way. I go, listen, I'm going to go get a high and tight. What would you guys pay me? And they go, nothing. So I go, whatever. I'm going to do it anyway. It's going to be funny. So we're off doing a workout in the gym, and our coach, Matt Sargent, walks in, and he's like, why are you staring at me? So I just deadpan him. I pull off my beanie, and there's this beautiful
shaved, like razor shaved
down to nice. Like, we're talking razor shave with just like a little portion on top.
Oh yeah, it's yeah. A beautiful, I remember those days.
Oh yeah, and he cracked up. It's the only time I've seen him smile his whole train up.
So. No, I definitely remember those, and it was funny for me later on in you know, going back to Fort Benning, now Fort Moore. But going back to Fort Benning and seeing Rangers now walking around looking like regular Joes and not even knowing the same, because mm-hmm. back in those days, you know, that was the way you automatically 100 yards, 200 yards away would identify a Ranger. So anyway, getting back to those days and then moving forward, you end up spending like about 5 years on active duty, all within second bat?
Correct.
Okay. So after that, you ended up, what'd you end up doing? Where'd you transition?
So I had a son, which was the big reason I got out. He's 9. He's actually coming down for the comp. So
that's very
excited
cool.
About that.
Yeah.
Worked in finance again. So I worked for a small PE firm, Pinnacle Capital, and then did a lateral transfer to Bank of America, where I work today.
Okay. Many people are familiar with that. I mean, I honestly, I've been with that organization when it was First Union, then Wachovia.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I'm an OG.
Yeah,
I just want you to know. So.
You are. You're part of the original Fortune 100.
I'm telling you. What is it? I won't talk about how long that's been. All right. So you've been, in your case, Gary, you've been in the National Guard this entire time and mm-hmm. stuff. So what do you do on the private side? You said now WTC, but prior to that, what were you doing?
You know, I kind of bounced around. I was what they call a school bum. So I just was bounced around on orders, and then I'd come home and find some orders and then go, you know, again, very fortunate. I got a string of schools to go to. And I just, you know, kept doing well. So they kept feeding me more. And then this, you know, I kind of had a decision to make. I was like kind of trying to decide if I wanted to, you know, go active duty or, you know, start to kind of build a civilian career. Was very fortunate, I got into like the sniper community, some competitive shooting, and then, found a consulting role, into the firearms industry. And, a lot of people would probably think it's like a dream job. But I was, you know, took some time away from some of my military stuff and, was really just, you know, anxious about, you know, trying to get more opportunities and watching some guys, go and accomplish things I wanted to do. So for me, it was like a full send decision. Around that time, I decided that I wanted to, start training up to try and do this competition. So I didn't know how I was going to get here, but knew of the Warrior Training Center. And so put in an inquiry, submitted the application, and then, kind of the rest is history and made that full-time jump. So this is, you know, I'm getting to my day job right now is training for the competition. As soon as it's over, I'll go back and I'll be a, you know, a Ranger instructor.
So you're AGR then?
So I'm ADOS, temporary. ADOS. Okay. Yeah. Yep. And it's,
so explain what that is, because some people hear that and they'll go, what the hell is that?
Yeah. And it's really what it is a great opportunity. And not a lot of guys know about it. But, what you get to do is you get to come down here and work on temporary active duty orders. And for the guard, again, it's a rare opportunity, but the Warrior Training Center is an incredible place. You know, you've got our pre-Ranger course, you know, Pathfinder, Jumpmaster, Air Assault, all these really awesome opportunities happening, that not only do you get to go and, you know, accomplish a lot of these schools and knock them out, add them to your resume, but, you know, for me, Ranger School is an awesome experience, but we're integrated with 4th RTB, so me as an RI, I got to go through the same exact certification process as the 4th RTB RIs, and really hone in on that craft, which is, you know, honestly, one of the greatest military accomplishments and you know, school certification processes I've ever been through. They do a great job there. You learn a ton. And again, you just get to like hone in on that craft of, you know, small unit tactics.
You work with now Sergeant Lachine?
Yes. Well, so he's at the RTLI problem or okay. Program. They feed into us as RTAC is the right. We're the pre-Ranger course. So we send them from us to Ranger School.
I don't remember the episode, but I'll try to drop it in here, maybe in the bottom. We actually went there, set up, and did a recording right below the jump or the rappel tower, and talk about that program with him. And at that time frame, he was a corporal. He got promoted to sergeant. Everybody's making a comment, by the way, in the video, like, why is this dude a corporal? Yeah, he actually tried to address that. It's very different.
Well, so when I was going through the certification process, I'm a new E5. I was a E4. And it was funny because, you know, I've been to sniper school. I've been to all these schools. And you're walking around as an E4. I'm grading, you know, Ranger students and stuff like that. And so you get a lot of side looks. And I can't tell you how many times I had to answer the question myself. How are you still an E4? The guard is a weird promotion process. And especially like you come down to the Warrior Training Center and it's weird. Your unit still promotes you that you belong to. So they kind of forget about you sometimes.
In a state, a unit in a state that you're not there for MUTAs, which is your unit training and stuff over the weekend. And you usually have like a MUTA 4 or a MUTA 5, depending upon whether it's a Friday or a Saturday-Sunday combination. But they don't understand that because you're not there, you're also out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. So there, if you're not there and you're off doing something like Warrior Training Center, then you're also not connected with the team in a way in which they want to support you.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's ways to manage that relationship, and I think I've, you know, still got a good relationship with my unit, my state, and you know, they've been very supportive of me coming down here. But yeah, I mean, really, the Warrior Training Center is like, if you're in the National Guard and you're looking for more, I mean, it's the place to be. The leadership down here is phenomenal. You're going to accomplish a lot in your military career in a very, very short amount of time.
Yeah,
and it's going to set you up networking wise to go wherever you want to go, or it's going to set you up to be an incredible soldier going back to your unit. And
you can go ahead and pump up Don Fox. He's over there off camera and everything. So
I mean, everyone involved over there, I've had nothing but great experiences with, you know, and we can get into it a little bit later too, but I'd kind of known, that my commander, Captain Potter, he's, competed in BRC last year, and just a phenomenal leader. My first sergeant is a phenomenal leader. I came in at a weird time too with the Warrior Training Center, and it would help to back up, but kind of when I decided I wanted to do Best Ranger, when I arrived, I was going through the certification process, and I kept bugging my first sergeant all the time. I was like, hey, is there any opportunity that any chance I could, you know, try out for the Best Ranger team? And pretty much eventually shot it down, gave me a hard no. So, you know, I had been training for at this point almost, you know, 9-10 months for this competition just to try out, and was told I wasn't going to get an opportunity, which was understandable. I was going through a certification process. I have a job to do here. So I just switched immediately, and I was like, you know what? I've been running a ton. I'm going to try and qualify for the Boston Marathon. So I went into
I'm just going to do the Boston.
Well, and it's crazy too, because I'm weird, and I actually hate running more than almost anything. But I got into like ultra marathoning. So I've always known I could run really far, but really slow, and I was comfortable with that. So I had just come off a 40 miler up in Pine Mountain, Georgia, but had decided, you know, I'm not a fast runner. That's not my strength. I want to kind of try and tackle that. So it was like I was going from I could run 40 miles at a 12-minute pace to now I'm going to try and run 26.2 at a 6 minute and 45 second pace. So it was a big challenge I was looking forward to. And I knew like that type of training was kind of where I needed to be to compete for BRC anyway. So I was like, I'll try and work on my speed this year and get an opportunity to try out next year. So I immediately went into that. It got to the point where I was like, I was walking a patrol, you know, at Camp Darby, and it's, you know, you're working like 18 to 24 hours, and then would go home and sleep for a few hours. I'd have recovery that next day. So I would just, you know, go tackle my speed workout and try and hit, you know, 16 miler or something like that and make up for some miles. But, was very fortunate. I was trying to strategically, and I don't know if Captain Potter knows this, but, strategically place myself around him in the, you know, months leading up, prior to this. And like, there was a half marathon we had, that him and, we talked about Whitney, Sergeant First Class Nick Whitney was, they were going to be running this half marathon. I was like, well, these are two BRC guys. I'm going to try and stick with them and just show them like I'm, you know, big and strong, but I'm fast too. I stuck with Captain Potter for a mile. I looked at my watch and we were running a 5:40 pace. Oh my so gosh. I was like, you know what? I'm not this good.
5:40. Yeah. What age are you right now?
Well, I'm 26. Yeah. Yeah. But it was ridiculously too fast. But I settled into my own pace, and I think he finished like a 1:125, which is flying for a half marathon. And then Whitney came in 1:32, and I was 1:34, 1:35 range. And I made sure they saw that I finished at that pace at least. And then, you know, I would try and when I first got down here, like I knew Nick was putting in some crazy miles. So I was trying to tag along on some of his runs, and coincidentally, a few of them, we passed my commander as he was doing his train up runs, and was just always trying to position myself of like, hey, like a lot of guys say they want to train up for this, but like I'm really serious and I want to do it. So I was about to pitch my operations order at RITEP, the certification process, and my commander calls me and he's like, hey, we're you know, about a month into this best ranger train up, and we're actually looking for another guy to be on our, you know, last team. We don't know who could step in that would be in shape. So would you want to do it? And I'm like, hell yeah. Like screw this marathon. I don't even really care about it anyways. Like I'll do this. So, did, you know, my last like 2 weeks of going through the certification process, I got certified and then stepped in with these guys. And, it was a humbling experience because, you know, I thought like, man, I'll be a little bit fresher than they are. And, you know, I think I was seeing the results of getting fast finally, and I was like feeling real confident. And then I go out here and like we just did a timed 5 mile run and a 9 mile ruck, and you know, my fastest times in both of them that I've ever done in my life, and I'm in the middle of the pack. So you're competing with guys who are just eating it and getting after it every day, all the time. And you know, we're always like, we'll walk into something and be like, hey, let's try and we got to pace at this, be smart. And then you watch, you know, team number four going off and flying, and you're trying to catch them and keep up with them and compete the whole time. So, you know, it's brought out the best, I think, in all of us. And it's awesome because, you know, we know realistically, like those guys are, they're in it to win it. And they're past competitors, so they know what they're expecting and how to be training. So, to even, you know, be in the conversation with them and, you know, to the very few times that we've, you know, at least gotten close to beating them on a run or something like that. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, it's an awesome experience to be able to be with a small group of guys who are trying to perform at this elite level.
Yeah, so, absolutely. So you guys, let's back up for a second because, when was it you both end up going through, Ranger school?
So for me, it was about 3 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. And then was that for right before you went to Warrior Training Center? Or
no. So, yeah, I just got to the Warrior Training Center about 6 months ago.
Okay.
And I got done and I was like, all right, I've been here for basic training, been here for airborne, and now Ranger school. I'm done. My Fort Benning time is over.
And you went through WTC for those?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I went through their pre-Ranger program, and it was amazing. When I went through it, I just remember thinking how well it prepared me.
Yeah.
But I was 100%. And the day I graduated, somebody asked me, like, would you ever come back here and work, or do you ever want to do Best Ranger? And I was like, no. Like, no, I never want to see this place ever again in my life.
Yeah. Talking to two guys who also spent, like, I don't know, I actually love that place. It was like 6 years I spent there, I think.
Yeah, I did not have the same.
Really?
Yeah, no, I did not like it.
You get in that look like, yeah.
It sucks. I mean, I get it. Like, it's an austere environment. Like,
it's pretty much every time I've been here, it's been uncomfortable, hungry, tired, and
it's the glory of Ford Moore.
But then, of course, I'm back here because that's like, you know, you just have that draw to like being uncomfortable. But I went through school. Was fortunate, didn't have to spend any more than the 62 days here. Didn't recycle, had a great experience with it. It was a very big moment in my military career, in my life. It's funny at the same time, like, I don't want to say it was an underwhelming experience, but I had built it up to be this huge thing and I'd trained for so long for it. And I got done and like, I'm a big visualizer. So I remember I didn't want it to be the biggest thing that I accomplished in my life or my military career. So I that Ranger tab that we got on graduation, I put it in my wallet, and it was, every time, you know, I'd pull out my card to pay for something or cash, and it was always a reminder of, like, is this helping you towards your goals? And, you know, a constant reminder of, like, this Ranger tab isn't going to be the greatest thing you accomplished. Like, it's, you know, a lot of guys, I think, they'll graduate, and it's a huge accomplishment. I don't want to, you know, take anything away from it, but it's, you know, easy to kind of fall into, like, all right, like, I've done it, now I can chill and, you know, take my foot off the gas pedal. And for me, it was just like, I wanted more. And, you know, I'm always trying to figure out, you know, where I can take my mind and my body and, you know, find those limits and stuff. So.
Heck yeah. Yeah. So Mike, when did you end up going through? I know it was a while ago.
Yeah. Like 12 years.
So when you end up going through, you weren't the last hard class though.
Yes, of course. Besides Mr. Fox.
I know when he went through. What's that? Yeah, I did go to the graduation. Actually, I think I was going through airborne school before you, and I think then you ended up going through. We were both going to go kind of a very similar type of path. But at any rate, during that time frame, of course, you know, going. Back then it was four phases. You had the desert phase. Everybody hated that phase, primarily because if you jump in, the winds would take your chute and you'd end up getting drug all over the place and everything, and it sucked, especially during the winter class. So I think you asked, was it a summer class or a winter class, right?
Winter.
Winter.
Yeah, true Ranger. Yeah, I was a winter class as well. It sucked, but yeah.
Your audience is people that aren't necessarily in the Army.
No, most of them are either active duty or former veterans, and a lot of them are Rangers, actually. So
okay, so the information I'll tell you is, if you can go in October, that's the ideal time, because you get Exodus after mountains.
Oh, that's right.
You get those 2 weeks off, going to Florida. Fat and happy, lazy.
I forgot about that. So we just went up to 5th RTB about this time last year, and we were talking about that, the blueberry pancakes, and and we didn't get offered that opportunity when we were up there.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
It lives up to the hype. I mean, I was Hungry Ranger for sure, and it was, I mean, all the stories you hear about them, I've heard when you go back, they're not as good.
But, I heard the same thing. That's why I wanted to experience to see if there really was, you know, everybody talking about it and everything else. Or are they as good as everybody talks about? So
I mean, I thought they were.
I just think you're just hungry as hell. So in 5th RTB, they're really like pumping you guys with all these calories. It's the opportunity in the mid phase to really pump you guys up and stuff before you go into the next phase.
Well, and even that those walking in those mountains, I mean, it destroys your body. I mean, there's a reason why people say it's the worst phase. And I always would like preface, like, especially when you tell guys about like that are going to the school and you're like, yeah, like when you get to mountains, like for the first week, you know, you get to eat hot food again. They're going to plump you up, but like you will use every bit of those calories that you take in.
Calories in, calories out.
Yeah, they take them out and then
they're
going
to get their money's worth.
Yeah.
We weren't able to go down Yona. We were able to go down the tower, but we didn't get a chance for that day to go down Yona. And it wasn't that long before that we were there that they had the lightning strike.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Unfortunately, lost a few guys during that lightning strike. It was pretty devastating. Mm-hmm. So, after all of that, you know, you're now coming back and competing for Best Ranger competition. What was the reason why you guys decided to do that? And then of course, how did you guys end up teaming up in the first place?
So, for me, it was Darby phase. I was on my patrol. I had Sergeant First Class Nick Whitney. He was grading me, gave me a no-go, and I won't.
Darby Faze is at Fort Moore now, former Fort Benning.
Yep, yeah, and he gave me a no-go on my patrol, and I won't let him forget it. Been trying to beat him at something ever since. But, yeah, he was carrying a rope on the patrol, and I just asked him, I was like, what are you doing? And he was tying these knots, and he's like, I'm, you know, preparing for this Best Ranger competition, and I didn't know anything about it at the time, but he was telling me about it. And so when I graduated, I looked him up and, you know, it was astonishing to me the amount of miles he was putting in and some of these paces. He invited me to like one of these online running clubs and, you know, I was keeping track of his train up and it was impressive to
like
me.
Like social media type?
So Strava, the app, there's a Instagram out there. It's a blue green training.
Okay. I've heard
that. Yeah. Yeah. And I stumbled upon it from him and they post like a top 30 leaderboard every week. And you got to get at least like 50 miles to be in this thing.
Follow Black Flag Nation?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That dude was just on a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But
he got runs that account anyway.
Oh, really?
6RTB.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it figures it's like a small community.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just reaching out to him, kind of asking him some questions. And then I got to watch his second year, which was last year. I kind of tuned in for it and was just like, wow, this is like the pinnacle. Like if you're looking at, you know, this community, it's a small group of guys who gets a Ranger tab, but then the guys who go out and do this, like it's impressive. So I was asking a bunch of questions. I decided, you know, at that point, you know, I was going to try and do it. And that kind of, you know, took me on that path to eventually ended up coming down here. But he was huge and motivating me to do that and just huge in helping me by giving me, you know, insights and what I should be doing.
Now you're going to get a chance to compete against him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited about it. And I told him, if I beat him at, you know, like the Prusik climb event and we're climbing this rope with, some knots, it's a pretty terrible event. It smokes you out pretty good. But I said, hey, if I beat you at this, you got to go back into my record and change my no-go to a go. I won't let him forget it, man. Especially like I remember the first time it took me like, oh, I don't know, like 6 months to beat him in weekly mileage.
Yeah.
And I was like chasing him and finally did it. And I was like, yeah, he gave me a no-go, but he can't beat me in mileage anymore. So.
How awesome is that, though, that you're getting an opportunity to compete against that guy?
Somebody
that actually was an RI during any one of your phases. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, whether it's an RI, it's a drill instructor, or whatever the case may be, you know?
Yeah. 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 No, it's an incredible opportunity. And that's the best part about, like, all this community.
Small community.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone's willing to help each other out and you know, it is competitive at the same time. You know, everyone's kind of always pressing for information and trying to see, you know, how train ups are going and stuff like that. But, it's a very unique experience, especially like, again, humbling of, you know, you think you're at the top of your game and then we're about to go out against 49 other teams that, you know, are training just as hard and are, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing here.
So how did you guys end up connecting together? And then how do they narrow it down to 50 teams?
So everyone's probably, you know, some units are smaller and a lot of fewer teams. And so it's as simple as two guys just volunteer and want to do it and they get the opportunity. I know for us, like we had an assessment and selection. So these guys came down.
They end up like pairing you together, or did you volunteer together?
So we were all paired when I had come into the process. We actually weren't on the same team, and then it was a constant reassessment, you know, of how guys were doing. You know, I mean, it could be something as simple as, like, someone could get injured at any point. I mean, one of us could, you know, do something tomorrow that takes us out, and then they've got to readjust things again. So it was a constant reassessment, and it just ended up being, you know, we were kind of paired together speed
day
wise.
One.
No, it was a pretty recent change, which, again, you know, it just proves you gotta constantly be, you can't let up at any point in the training process, and you gotta just constantly be pushing each other. And so yeah, we just, you know, ended up being around the same times. He's faster than me for sure, but
wow, the old man is like running over you.
It's, yeah, I mean, again, yeah, humbling, like these.
The gray beard, even though he hasn't, like, grown it out or anything.
But, it's, and he's been awesome to look up to. You know, it's, I'm young, but I'm not lost on the fact that, you know, I'm already seeing it. I'm having to work harder to stay in shape and stay at this level, even against, you know, some of these guys that are younger than me. But,
well, so let's talk about a little bit about the competition. So, I mean, there's a time frame in which you end up really understanding, okay, every year annually there is what's called Best Ranger Competition. Mm-hmm. It's well known, and for anybody that wants to research it, you can go out and find a lot of information by just hitting Google. But if you look at that, what you'll find is that there are teams that go out there on a regular basis and compete at a very high level. And it was only until recently where they decided, okay, we've had so many teams that came back as repeats, we need to make it to where you can't go any longer than 3 years. And so it was very important for them to, like, limit that opportunity. So, you know, when you start looking at this this competition, you know, and sizing up everybody that you're going to, what was that kind of like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a, like, just, again, a humbling experience. And you know, this whole process is a roller coaster. Like, you have days where you feel great and you crush it, and you're, you know, working through these workouts and you're not thinking about anyone else.
What kind of workouts? Take me through a day of what it is in training.
So the first thing I'd say is that everyone that comes here has already proven that they're above the average standard.
Absolutely.
Military.
You're thinking 50 teams. I mean, that's 100 people above everybody that's ever gone through Ranger School.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know the question I asked for myself was, okay, where do I need to be to compete? So for your listeners, I'd say there's two quantifiable measures that aren't, like, the end-all be-all, but here's where you want to be. If you're going to run a 5 mile, run it under 32.
If Which gonna, typically back in the day was like a 40 in order to make, like, the standard.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you want to be at a 32 or less, but really if you want to win, you want to be at 30 minutes or less.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's fast.
Him and I ran a 31, and we're thinking, like, we're solid.
Yeah.
No, we're not even the best team in the National Guard.
Yeah.
And we're close, but we're not the best. Ruck-wise, 12 mile, you want to be hour 50. Mm-hmm. The best team for the National Guard is probably hour 45.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you're going, like, putting these times up, and, you know, like, him and I were laughing because it's like we just, you know,
I mean, we did a 9 mile, and I laugh because I finished last in the 9 mile, and my average pace for 45 dry was like 9:22.
Oh,
and
my
here,
gosh,
I'm over here. I'm thinking I'm killing it. By mile two, I'm getting passed up by everyone. And so, I mean, it's just there's being fit and BRC fit is what I'd say. And so for us, it's been, okay, him and I know we're not going to win on the opening run. We'll probably be top 10. But we need to make it up on the proficiencies.
Yeah.
And so there's this constant game, give and take. I would say this about BRC is, like, you can't be average and compete.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to put in the time. There's no excuses. times tell all. And that's what I love about the Ranger Standard is, whether you like it or not, like, guess what? There are people who can move faster and further than you. Figure it out. Figure out how to win. We don't know that we'll win, but we're going to do very well. And so that drive of, like, seeing teams that are absolutely, like, the team, National Guard team that's ahead of us, we've been in their wake the whole time. And it's like, but it's pushed us and it's pushed them because we're constantly pushing against their pace.
Yeah.
And it's pushed them to be better. And it's like, at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you right now, you know, everyone sleeps on the National Guard like, oh, they're part-time, this and that. I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to go out there and we're going to kick some ass.
Like, you want to talk about, like, the level of commitment. Like, these guys are stepping away from, you know, a job and a life to come down here and train up, and you got to train for the train up. But then when you talk about what goes into, like, our days and our weeks, you know, it's at least you're doing at least probably 60 to 65 miles on a light week. And, you know, half of that's weighted, whether you're wearing a plate carrier and plates on runs in uniform or, you know, rucks, you know, it's a constant beat down of your body. And then you're going through the whole day training on different proficiencies. Long days is what it makes for. But, I mean, it's a different level of commitment. And you're thinking about, you know, what everyone else is doing that you've got to, you know, stay in there and be doing the same things for. So
what are you guys doing for, like, immediate recovery, like that day-to-day recovery?
You find it where you can. You know, it's a lot of stretching. Making sure that you're getting in the right nutrition. And you know, I mean, even on our, like, our light days or when we're at a range shooting and, you know, you're still in the sun all day, you know, you're being at a range is exhausting in and of itself in just a different way. So yeah, I mean, we all have little tricks and stuff like that. I know I got, like, the Normatec boots and I've pretty much been living in them for a few hours every night and, you know, trying to drain my legs, lactic acid, stuff like that. And I think we all have individual things that, like, work for us that we've brought into it. So
I would say this, being an old school guy.
The
gray beard at the table.
Hey, listen, the gray beard at the table is going to tell you drink beer. And, like, I haven't done any of the new school Normatec boots. You know, listen, I did two Saturdays ago. I did, like, a half marathon followed by a 5K. You know, I drank the night before. That's how the old school Rangers
were.
Yeah,
see, it's crazy. Like, I don't have the natural gift in me, I guess. You know, and when I decided I was going to do this, I, you know, I haven't had a drop of alcohol since, and I'm weird about my sleep and stuff like that, and trying to recover, and you know, it's different personalities for sure in this thing, but you know, we're just trying to make it to the start line and you know, have the best time doing it, because that's important too. You gotta, you know, you can get bogged down, like, on the roller coaster of it, of days feeling great and days, you know, feeling like, man, do I even belong here? But it's hard to stop and really think, like, and appreciate, you know, how hard these guys are pushing it and where you're at too. So yeah, just
so you guys actually, you know, as part of this total competition and everything, you guys have, when you talked about the 50 teams that are competing, you guys have three teams that are competing, right?
Yeah.
From the Army National Guard. Yeah.
So how it works is every year there's an allocation of slots. So, like, last year they had 58, and what they realized is, like, the West Point team, my uncle, who's West Pointer, I busted his chops. They heat catted on the first event. They didn't even finish the first event. But what you run up against realistically is a time standard. And so what you're doing by having more teams in is you're giving teams on that lower edge less time to recover into ruck hold. So we had a team last year from the National Guard who didn't finish, who was negative 40 minutes. So they got to the ruck hold, and the night ruck had already started. So they're negative 40. Now, some of that's precipitous of the fact that they're just not at the high level you need to be to complete this. I get that. So I think what they did this year is like, hey, we're going to accept 50 teams. They're going to be the best 50 teams. And that way it gives a more equal balance, right? So for us, how the WTC does it is they hold a assessment at the beginning. They get your general numbers. I shouldn't say unfortunately, but generally speaking, they can take two numbers, your 5-mile run time and your ruck time. And based on historical data, as Mr. Fox has said, is I'm a finance guy, so I love the numbers.
You're statistical. Yeah, I'm a statistical guy. You're using database methodology.
So they can look at historical norms and be like, okay, based on these two numbers, even though it's a limited pool, we can kind of figure out, like, before you get to the ranges, where you're going to be.
Makes total sense that you guys are then at a level in which it's selection because, you know, again, if you're going to be competing against the best, you're not just representing, let's say, your individual unit. In you guys' case, you're representing Warrior Training Center or the Army National Guard, more importantly. Yeah. So it's very critical that they select the best teams in order to compete. And they do it in a way in which, like you're describing, very statistical base, analytical base, in evaluating past history of what they think is going to succeed in this whole thing.
I think they've done a great job. I mean, we can see there's a method to the madness. And again, it just pushes you that much more in each week to be competing at a higher level. I think, you know, everyone's happy with how the teams have played out this year. And we're excited to be, you know, going forward and just being able to compete together. So.
The challenge here, I think, though, is that the competition, each of the events and stuff has changed over the years. I mean, so what you may have used in past history, the data sets or the data points may be very different. Mm-hmm. Switch gears then in terms of take me through a typical day of what you guys are doing in training for this competition.
It changes day to day. We got speed workout days and then kind of some longer you say the recovery runs, but you know, you're still pushing a good pace. You know, strength training usually in the evening and then, you know, be like after our speed workout in the morning, it'll be, you know, we're working some sort of proficiency, whether that's, you know, just getting hands on time with the weapon systems, assembly, disassembly. We're doing, you know, working poncho rafts, different events that we know historically have been in the competition and we can anticipate, you know, the Prusik climb on the rope, just stuff like that. And then there'll usually be another, you know, either ruck or run after the lunch hour, followed by, you know, some more proficiency training, and then either that strength session in the evening or another run or ruck. But it's definitely, you're doing three very physical things about every day. Your weekends is kind of like up to you as to, you know, how your body recovers, if you want to hit a bike or a run or a swim, something low impact. But I mean, it's a very structured plan, and it gives us the best opportunity to, you know, be building durability and improving, you know, throughout the whole entire process.
It totally makes sense. I mean, and in some ways you don't know what's going to be coming around the corner. I mean, part of the thing of what they're trying to do each year is make it to where there is some surprise event or something that's unexpected throughout the process.
Yeah.
So here's what I'd say is that we have our coach currently has watched 7 years of BRC. So he's seen 7 years of historical data. The reality is they can only permutate this thing so far, right? Just logistically.
Sure.
So for us, the big thing is like, if we want to contend, we know like some things never change. The first event is always going to be a mass buddy start run. Now what that contains, we don't know. So we're going to plan off last year's, but the reality is that you're going to have teams that are running 6-minute miles with weighted vests. Yeah. And then they get into a sandbag and they're running 7-minute miles. So how we as a team counteract that is twofold, is we say, okay, we can't run that, but we're going to run 7-minute miles and we're going to average that. But guess what? On the next event, we're going to do this, this, and this. So it's like durability. Yeah. And then when we get to the range, guess what? Him and I, I'll tell you, when I started this thing, I was a terrible pistol shooter. Okay. I couldn't hit that glass door. Okay. And now I'm at a point where I'm well above average. Maybe not with time, but with taking my time with shots, I could hit 99% of my shots.
And so you really play off too. Like, you got to be self-aware of your strengths and your weaknesses, yep, and then play it into your overall strategy. Because everyone's at a different place with, you know, where they're going to be at every event. And
sure,
it's also like, you know, we got to have mindfulness during the competition to, you know, make sure that we're keeping those things in mind while, you know, the heat of the competition is on and everyone's just trying to go fast and hard at all times. But yeah.
Well, I think with something like this too, you guys are going to need a touch of luck. If you're going to win this thing anyway, whether you come from 75th, JSOC, whatever, you're going to need a touch of luck to be standing on the podium at the end of
it. Yeah, for sure.
100%.
So that also means that 49 other teams are going to have a stroke of bad luck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's going to be commonplace, right?
And I wouldn't wish for anyone, like even Sergeant Whitney, to slip and fall and, you know.
I mean, the fact that you bring him up. But the thing is, like, everyone's going to have that bad luck moment.
Yeah.
And they just don't know that they're in it right now.
You're going to have.
It absolutely has happened. So you talk about the event that happened with you in college football and how it was just, you know, a non-contact, simple event. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So back in the day, it was always interesting. I would usually not go on Friday. I would always show up at Darby on Saturday and show up at the field, and all the events were going on at that phase and everything. And you could look at who was in the top, probably five, top six, and they were always going to remain that top five, top six. But probably half the field dropped out by Saturday morning.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, another, like, big thing you got to think about, too, and, like, I've done a lot of sniper-oriented competition shooting events, and, you know, you can be, you know, the greatest at everything, but there's going to come a point to where you're going to, you know, have a bad stage in the overall competition, and it's a lot about,
you know, pressure's on.
Yeah,
and, it's a timed event.
Yeah, and it could be something you've done 1,000 times, and, you know, something just doesn't go your way, and it's, you know, having that ability to just, you know, throw it out of your mind and move on to the next competition. I mean, this whole thing, it's a 60-hour competition. You know, it's not, you know, you can't get bogged down on one or two events when there's, you know, multiple every single day, and you're constantly going to the next one. So keeping that cool head and, you know, just – kind of you want to look at, like, being able to stay, you don't have to win every one of them, but just stay competitive at each of them. And when something doesn't go your way, just throw it out and move on to the next.
What happens if you guys don't finish within the top 10 or top 5? Are you guys committed maybe to coming back next year and doing this again in another year of competition? Is this, in other words, are you guys going into this opportunity looking at it as, all right, obviously I want to win this thing, but if I don't, it's an experience of which I'm going to learn from and I'm going to adjust and I'm going to come back?
I'll let you go first. Be succinct, boys.
You know, the best thing for me is just the competition of, you know, I haven't done the competition, but
measuring yourself against them.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I look at, you know, as we talked about
100 words or less,
talked about feeling bad about, you know, you're putting up great times, but it's nowhere near what the top team is. You watch what those guys, they were in your same boat the first time they did it. And then they get to go out and blow their minds once again and be even faster than they ever thought possible. So it hits the back of your mind. I think I'm staying focused on the 25-meter target, though, and it's
so you're not looking past the competition right now.
I won't lie and say I haven't thought about it.
But, okay.
But yeah. Right now it's this.
Mike?
So I'm going to give a shameless plug to Bank of America right now. They actually gave me, like, pay leave to do this, so credit to them. Same as my teammate, 25-meter. I'm here to I love to win it. Being practical, I think both of us realize, you know, it's going to take some luck. Top 10, I think him and I are right in the spot. Top 5, I think we're right in the spot.
Do you think you guys are going to be the best team from the National Guard?
My mentality.
Ooh, we're trying. I wish.
Hey, you know what? But we'll see what happens.
We're there. We're very close.
If your goal was to beat everybody in the National Guard, do you think that would residually end up as a top 5?
To me, I'm going to tell you, my mentality is winning is everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to go out, and if we can win every event and do our thing, it'd be awesome to have a first, second place National Guard finish for sure.
Let me put it this way. Him and I, our times are historically quick enough to be top 5, but there is tremendous talent out there. And the fact that we're
damn it, don't let that enter into the equation, though. No. So where are you guys committed to?
Hear me out. We have a team that's in front of us that is incredible. Without them, I think we would have a shot to compete for first.
Nah, don't let somebody else stand in your way.
It's okay. We're not okay. We're okay with that. Here's the thing. The four of us, and we have a third team too that's going to do well, but the four of us constantly push each other. There's no excuses. It's here's the workout today. Let's fucking get it. Sorry for the language.
Hey, you're fine with it.
Let's get it. And I'll tell you what, regardless of where him and I place, I'm going to tell you right now, because of them, because of the WTC program, we're going to place better than we ever would have on our own.
Yeah.
And I'll let that program speak for itself. So to Mr. Sider, he's our guy. To Mr. Fox, to Master Sergeant Eric, my training partner right here, you know, you can take credit for yourself, but the reality is we're a byproduct of the environment around us.
Yeah.
And the National Guard, people sleep on us all the time, but the two guys on the team we're competing against realistically are incredible, and they're humble and they're hungry.
Yeah.
It's made us better. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And so, I will say, just to end it, I mean, this is a competition of guys who probably have a few screws loose in the head. And I mean, I've watched this guy almost completely become a casualty of this training program.
Who, me?
I mean, we.
Oh, can we say this? All right. I'll give you this. So we're doing a mini comp. You guys will appreciate this. It'll increase viewership. So I'll give you my one fault during this entire pro. Him and I hum. I mean, we're 6 minute mile guys. I mean, we're sub 9:30 Rutgers. I mean, just every benchmark, Delta Force would be sitting there like, oh yeah, these are the guys, right? Maybe not pistol wise. Anyway, the point is, we get done with this mini comp, and me and my former partner, we're pushing it. We're trying to push the National Guard team that's allegedly the top team. We get to the rock, and we're pushing so hard. I finish the rock, and by the time I finish the rock, I go to change my boots in the gym at the WTC complex, and I go to change them. My whole lower body goes into a full cramp.
Oh.
I'm talking shin, and it was like cyclical. It was like feet, calves, shins, hamstrings. I mean, you can make this up. It took the medical station coming down, giving me two IVs, and it took probably 25 minutes for me to get out of this crate.
And just to show you that the dedication to, even in a training event, to push that hard, and you know, I would find it hard to believe that you know, if we find ourselves in a spot where we're fighting from behind, that, you know, we're either gonna get booted out or that's gonna happen. So
that's it.
Yeah.
No, that's commitment. I love that aspect of it. First off, I appreciate you guys coming up here and joining us on the podcast and be a part of this thing and kind of sharing more about the Best Ranger competition. I mean, it's one thing to have guys like we had talked about who are on active duty, who are committed to going to this competition, competing against the best. But when you get guys like yourselves who are out of the norm, you know, whether it's a Marine, an Air Force guy, or somebody who's not part of, honestly, Ranger Regiment, who typically competes in the top level. It's exciting, you know, yeah. to kind of yeah. see that competition that's going on. And I wish you guys nothing but the best. And I hope, you know, we'll have to reach back out. And hopefully before we release this, I think we'll probably release this before the actual competition. So we'll have your roster numbers yeah, and we'll try yeah. to include those yeah. so that people can watch those events and see how well you guys are doing. And go ahead.
So two quick things.
Yeah.
First off, thanks to your podcast. Also, what the viewership doesn't know is that we all bought beers tonight. They go 100% back to veterans.
Yes, absolutely.
So credit to this brewery. But also, more importantly, thank you to bringing awareness to this competition. You know, Mr. Fox, if you're in National Guard, I highly recommend check out WTC.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
check it out. That's all I have to say. I mean...
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I'm just a specialist. I'm the lowest ranking guy here, so I mean, that's all I got. But anyway, thank you, you guys.
Well, thank you. Yeah, yeah, no. There is a competition level which Warrior Training Center is very much known for having this level of experience and expertise, and you know, preparing individuals for whatever it is they're going into Master Gunner School or you know Ranger or whatever that program may be. It's a great program to look at and investigate into. But once again, I can't thank you guys both enough for taking time out of your individual training. This is a very tough competition in which you guys we're going to be there. At least I'll be there to see you guys compete. I hope to see you guys there.
You're there Saturday, correct?
That's
Columbus.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So listen, National Guard is typically like low 40s on the team number. So
I want to see you guys like in the top 10, top
and
5.
Sergeant Streak. No, I mean like number wise.
Yeah.
So just know that at Columbus, when we're done with the WOD of the day or whatever it's going to be, me and Sergeant Streaks are going to come over and hug you.
I love it. I'll be looking forward to it, guys. Yeah. Again, thank you guys both so much for coming
out
here.
Hey, good luck, gents. I hope you guys
perform. Thank you.